This is the Farming for a Better Climate podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Farming for a Better Climate podcast. My name is Seamus Murphy and I'm usually joined by Robert Ramsey, but Robert is away busy working on a farm today, so it's just myself. What we've been looking at over the past kind of few months is a deep dive into each individual farming sector, we'll say, and how they've reacted to the global shocks of the energy crisis, cost of living crisis, the war in Ukraine, and how all that has impacted beef, sheep, dairy, arable, and how farmers, I suppose, are reacting and responding to that. But that is kind of only a part of the picture, and a lot of things have been happening in government and in policy over that span as well. And in Scotland, we just recently we have a new First Minister. So to kind of discuss some of the changes or the changes that have came in predominantly environmental policy, I have Ian Boyd here to speak. Welcome to the podcast, Ian.
Thanks for having us, Seamus. Hope this is maybe a slight upgrade from Robert, but we'll find out how this goes.
Yeah, we'll see. There's been a lot of kind of shifts in policy over the last, say, 12, 16 months. What do you think are the kind of big ones that farmers need to be aware of?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd necessarily say it's a shift in policy. It's more kind of there's a lot of policies out there, perhaps without, you know, a lot of big targets, lots of ambition and to achieve certain things, but the kind of support and the plan to maybe get from what the policy is to actually achieving real world results, I think, is been coming under a bit of scrutiny recently. And you've seen that especially, I don't know if anyone watches First Minister's questions, but over the last several weeks, I think every single one of them has been interrupted by protesters, and it tends to be environmental or climate change or oil, kind of those kind of topics, protesters. Yeah. And their main kind of issue is that they want to see real action, and it's a lot of talking and things and stuff they feel, but they want to actually see more ambition and more actual action taking place. Which, you know, everyone has a right to protest. There's a bit of criticism about, you know, sometimes with direct actions that actually alienate people. Does it actually achieve anything? I think the issue with First Minister's questions is that it's actually interrupting the democratic process a little bit, because they keep having to stop. They have less time to actually discuss important topics and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, and through that, there's been definitely a bit of news stories and work by Scottish, UK, other governments recently to try and maybe kind of just have a bit of a reality check on what their plans are and how likely they are to actually achieve it, and what needs to be done between now and whatever your target date is, if it's 2045 in Scotland for net zero, 2050 in the rest of UK. So yeah, that's kind of been happening quite a lot recently, and there's been quite a lot of news coverage in the last couple of weeks about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there is. We've kind of touched on the targets in some of the other episodes where we've been looking at specific sectors, and there is kind of what there seems to be quite a bit of confusion or uncertainty within the agricultural industry as to what the targets will actually mean for individual farm businesses, particularly when it comes to climate targets and achieving net zero by 2045. Can you shed any light on that? Is, I suppose, the big question is, and I think I know the answer, but are individual farm businesses going to be expected to achieve net zero?
So I think the first thing to point out is net. A lot of people don't really understand what net zero is, and I'd say that is probably across the board. It's like confusing for myself. It's confusing for politicians. It's confusing for farmers. The definitions on it maybe slightly change from time to time, but essentially it doesn't mean no emissions. It means just this balance between emissions and sinks. So basically the fact we exist, the fact we need food, we need energy, that sort of thing, there will always be emissions associated with that. It's very difficult to actually completely get rid of them 100%. but you try and balance off any emissions that you try and minimize as much as you can, but anything you can't get rid of, you have to try and offset that by taking it back in through some way, whether that's, for example, through trees, or maybe some kind of technological fix. That is kind of what they're looking at. So, no, I think it's very difficult as a sector generally for agriculture to get to net zero, just simply if you think what's involved in food production, you know, whether it's livestock, whether it's arable. It's a very big challenge, and it will be difficult to get to this net zero target. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, farmers, individual farmers, they also have, as well as, you know, I think there's a lot of focus is put on the emissions from agriculture, but there should be an equal amount of focus on all the good stuff and all the potential carbon benefits and climate change benefits that are being done on farms. Farmers are land managers. They control really important ecosystems, really important habitats, and they all play a big role in kind of offsetting these emissions, but also massive benefits to other things like water quality and air quality and wildlife, that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, and then I suppose when we talk about how governments can guide that, or like deliver what they're trying to deliver in terms of their targets, this week there has been a lot of talk about Green Day, which was I don't know if that's not a 90s early 2000s punk rock band, a day where kind of there was supposed to be a lot of policy, environmental policy released by UK government, and there has been an update to the net zero strategy. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so essentially this week the UK government, now things like environmental stuff, it is devolved in Scotland, but mm-hmm. it does all interlink, you know, it's all kind of, at the end of the day, we're all trying to achieve the same target. And I think it's good to have a bit of consensus and a bit of ambition across the whole of the United Kingdom. This week, for example, the UK government released kind of an update of its plan. And essentially why that came about was the High Court, I think it was last year, actually really heavily criticised the kind of targets that were set, as in there wasn't enough actual plan to achieve them. It was, you know, just these targets were set, policy was set, and then it kind of stalled a little bit. Now, there has been really good progress, to be honest, over the last few years in reducing our emissions. If you look at all of our emission stats, you can see they are on a downward trend. The problem is that actually, if we don't do more further, they're going to start to creep up again. And what we've actually done so far to this point is we've probably taken a lot of the easy stuff, the kind of low-hanging fruit has kind of been tackled, which has seen these kind of quite quick, relatively easy drops.
Yeah.
And now it's getting to the more tricky stuff. And it is difficult because actually in some cases it's stuff you maybe don't want to change. You know, it's perhaps quite a big behavior change for certain things. But it's also quite reliant on technology and kind of modern innovations if we want to keep living the kind of lifestyle and the current way we're living at the moment. A lot of people say we actually shouldn't be doing that. We should be looking to radically change kind of the way we kind of our economy works and things like that as well. The UK government this week released its, what it called its 2030 Strategic Framework for International Climate and Nature Action, which is quite a...
rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, that's a really nice title. And in it, there was kind of what it said was like a few challenges, I guess is how they've put it. Mm-hmm. One of it, challenge one, was transition to clean technologies and sustainable practices across all sectors. Challenge two was build resilience and adapt to climate impacts, supporting communities, economies, and ecosystems. Challenge three was increase protection, conservation, and restoration of nature and tackle key drivers of nature loss. Challenge four was to strengthen international agreements and cooperation to accelerate delivery of climate and nature commitments. challenge five was basically all to do with financial flows with net zero. And challenge six was shifting kind of trade and rules and what it calls this kind of transition to net zero and a positive future. Kind of immediately as soon as they released this, it was criticized by various environmental organizations from not going far enough still. But I mean, there is quite a lot of stuff in this. A lot of it, for example, like the energy kind of policy stuff. We've done a lot of work in the energy sector so far to reduce our reliance on certain types of fossil fuels, such as coal. We are still really heavily reliant on fossil fuels, or in particular natural gas. It's still, you know, fossil fuels still are the majority of our energy, meet the majority of our energy needs. So there's a few policies in there about, well, what can we do to kind of adapt to that and change that. Some of it was about the UK government is quite focused on nuclear as an option, and in particular kind of smaller stuff. The Scottish government maybe less so, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of kind of these, hoping for these future technological fixes that might help to achieve these goals, including stuff like carbon capture and storage, which is essentially using technology to suck carbon dioxide out of the air, and then you either make it into a solid or you store it under the North Sea, for example. There's a site they've been looking to try and get underway and develop for quite a few years up in the northeast of Scotland, for example. But it's never quite happened. It's all these kind of future things they're hoping that will be it. And the risk there is, if you're looking for just technology and, you know, some kind of magic silver bullet, is that it's not actually going to change your behavior. It's not actually going to do stuff to minimize or mitigate emissions. It could perhaps be used as an excuse of like, oh, we can just carry on doing what we're doing because we're going to have this technology which will kind of completely offset all this stuff at some point. So there's a slight concern there.
I think that's quite interesting as well for farmers, because a lot of farmers will look at kind of their own kind of systems and see them as being quite efficient, quite beneficial, we would say, in terms of the multiple benefits that they provide, all these kind of things. And then you look at kind of some, I suppose, oil and gas on the other side of it, and these kind of large companies that have set these targets to achieve net zero, or, you know, and when you look into the fine detail of it in the small print, is like, I've looked at too many of these kind of reports in the past in my life to, like, you always look at the fine print and it says something that, like, contingent on we'll say carbon capture and storage being a viable option by 2026 or something like that. So it's essentially they're setting these targets that are reliant on technology which is not currently available, but they assume that it will be available. But there's a strong, you know, whenever you do that, you're it's a huge risk that technology will not be available, and then you will not be able to achieve your emissions reduction. So I think it is something that I think farmers are probably aware of, that there's a lot of kind of, I'm not sure if it qualifies fully for greenwashing, but that kind of approach where targets are set with the kind of knowledge that they are unachievable without some form of, like, new technology that we don't yet have, which is makes it an extremely loose target. Essentially, it's a very, like, non-committal kind of commitment, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, to me, ambitious targets are really important, because if you didn't set them in the first place, you wouldn't have any change at all. So it does, it drives innovation, it drives ambition, you know, it is really important, but you do need to back it up with actual support, funding, policies, you know, something actually tangible that's going to make a difference. I mean, a quite a clear example of this was something quite similar. So if we stick on the energy thing, homes in UK and Scotland are some of the worst insulated, some of the least energy efficient in Europe.
Yeah.
And I think it was the UK Climate Change Committee said there was a massive gap in the policy for better insulating homes, for example. So that's perhaps quite a simple way. You know, if you can do stuff like that, it improves, you know, arguably it's going to improve multiple things. It'll improve health, well-being, it'll reduce your energy bills, which at the moment is incredibly important, and it'll reduce your need, you know, on actual electricity or gas or whatever you heat your home with, if you're a bit more efficient with it. So it's sort of things like that is kind of backing up the ambition with the steps and the clear path, I think, to get it, because that's what everyone needs at the end of the day. They need a bit of a kind of, you know, a clear plan, a clear outline, and a bit of long-term security about this is what's going to be happening over the next 10 years, and this is what we need you to do, and this will help us achieve these targets. There's also, like, I mean, within there, if we talk about agriculture, UK and Scotland are taking slightly different approaches, I guess, in terms of agriculture and environmental stuff in particular, especially since Brexit. Yeah. Scotland's kind of wanting to align itself more or less still with what EU policy is. The UK government is kind of taking a slightly different approach in it, where it's kind of wanting to set its own stuff, and a lot of it will be quite similar still, but there will be some slight changes here and there. But a lot of the kind of agricultural stuff in this regarding to climate change is, you know, it's about kind of making progress and making support available so that you're doing things like nature benefit and biodiversity benefit and environmental gain, while at the same time maintaining food security and, you know, maintaining affordable, nutritious food for everyone. So it's kind of trying to get that balance right. There's a lot of kind of science and technology and stuff as well, which they're talking about for agriculture, which can help to reduce emissions, offset emissions. Some of it's quite simple stuff. Some of it could be quite complicated stuff. And there's also a lot of things to do with biodiversity loss, which is becoming more and more in our light.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff to do with biodiversity loss, which is becoming more and more interlinked, you know, with kind of various climate change and environmental policies.
And then I think, well, in terms of the actual what is happening across the border, there's the new environmental land management scheme, which is, as you say, it's kind of separate. There is that division from between what's happening in Scotland and England, but I suppose as Scotland tries to align with or maintain that kind of alignment with the EU, and England kind of tries to toe its own path, I suppose. But there's still, I suppose, you could look at ELMS and see what may be coming down the line for farmers in Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff, you know, preparing for sustainable farming and various things like that. There's I thought it was kind of interesting this week where, I mean, going back to the politics of it, Kate Forbes was offered the rural affairs kind of position in the Scottish government, and a lot of the media reported that as a demotion for her, as if this was like quite a kick in the teeth going from the kind of finance position down to rural affairs. But I think a lot of people work in the sector, a lot of people in agriculture wouldn't kind of view it that way personally. But yeah, I think it's kind of clear that what the overall goal and overall approach is going to be over the next few years, and it is this kind of focus more on environmental gain, you know, public good, that sort of stuff, will be the backbone, I think, of a lot of policy, in addition to please keep producing food that's affordable and nutritious and sustainable at the same time. You know, it's trying to get all that balanced, and yeah, getting support where it's needed is the tricky part.
I think that shift, as you mentioned, the preparing for sustainable farming, and I think that the funding of the soil sampling and the carbon audits, and you know, internally anyway, we've our SSE consulting and our consultants have never been doing as many carbon audits. So it shows the direction of travel anyway, even though we're still on the, I always get this mixed up, the slow and steady or whatever the term is, but we're, the direction of travel is kind of similar to, I suppose, that payment for public good, and you could look at Elms, what's being rolled out there, and I suppose make those kind of connections. Just, you also mentioned, we've kind of touched on it, you mentioned Kate Forbes, and of course Hamza Youssef is the new First Minister, taking over from Nicola Sturgeon. Do you see any kind of changes coming with a new kind of oh God, what do you call that? The new
regime, First Minister.
Regime, yeah. And do you see any kind of changes coming with the new regime there?
Not really, not immediately. I think Hamza Youssef was seen as the kind of continuity candidate. So I think a lot of it will kind of carry on with what was before, I would imagine, especially kind of short term. But we'll wait and see.
There is this kind of shit, this slow kind of move towards that kind of more environmental, sustainability orientated policy, and particularly, or not particularly, it's kind of across the board, but it also is coming into agriculture. Why do you think that is? We know the climate crisis is something we have to deal with, but is it down to kind of that shift in public opinion as well?
Yeah, I think it can be frustrating sometimes for farmers to, you know, they feel they're being asked to juggle multiple balls. They're being asked to do absolutely everything all at the same time, or have done it yesterday, you know. But I think it is important to remember that, you know, policies only come about because, you know, governments wouldn't do it if it's not in public interest or public demand. Mm. So yeah, there is a growing need and a growing demand, I would say, from the public that they want these things. So they want to see sustainable food and various kind of ambition on climate change measures and biodiversity and improvements to their water quality and all this sort of stuff. So it's important to, I think, always remember that, is that if you're not doing these things, you know, you will get left behind, because this is what the kind of general consensus is. This is what the consumer wants. It's what the supermarkets want. It's what all the big kind of global companies and suppliers want. And it is also, we get kind of sometimes a bit bogged down on what we're doing in Scotland or UK, or even like what we're doing individually on, you know, farm. I think it's important to remember it's a global issue, and every country mm-hmm. in the world are doing things and have targets. And we used to be seen a bit as leading the way in that. I feel it's stalling a little bit now. I think some other countries are doing a bit more or being a bit more ambitious, which there's a slight risk with that as well, because as well as it's been a big challenge, it is a massive opportunity. There's a massive green revolution. There's perhaps, you know, quite a lot of jobs and kind of skills and tech and various things like that which need input into it. Can be a massive boost to the economy. So I think there's a slight risk of being left behind, and I think it's really important to remember that when maybe you feel a bit disgruntled or questioning why you're having to do a certain thing. I think it's really important that we all do our part and we all try and make it as best as we possibly can, and to also, I think it's important to look for these opportunities and to take them where they are, because there is opportunities out there, and you know, it could be really nice kind of stuff for some businesses to kind of diversify or you know, think of alternative income streams in the future as well.
That's absolutely key to it all, is that kind of the opportunity that is in front of us in agriculture. and kind of taking advantage of that and understanding that and taking advantage of it is key to like successfully kind of continuing to produce food in a sustainable, environmentally friendly way and becoming kind of a leader in that field globally, and then kind of, you know, being the best. I must add that we are recording this the day after all of this documentation, the Green Day occurred. So we have, I think I read somewhere there's 6,000 pages of updated policy was released yesterday. So I won't try and admit that myself and Ian have read all of it.
No, I'm on page 34 at the moment.
Yeah, but it's just it was worth kind of updating folk on that there has been kind of major changes there very recently. And although it's at that UK level, it is likely to trickle down to the Scottish kind of level and impact on, you know, the day-to-day activities of farmers. And on top of kind of what UK have kind of announced recently, there's the Inflation Reduction Act, which came in the US, and that has a massive kind of environmental and sustainability kind of implications for business and agriculture in the US. And similarly in the EU, there's a lot of developments occurring kind of regularly. This stuff is really, really hot at the moment, and it's all kind of changing on a monthly basis, or those policy updates, as we kind of try to move from that phase of setting targets to actually taking action. I think that's kind of the way I try to think about it, is in the past, between, you know, in the past say 5 to 10 years, there's been a lot of target setting, and as we creep closer to 2030, that's when action is going to be the main goal. And that's where I suppose we need to be aware of that as an industry, that, you know, these targets that we've been hearing about for a long time are going to really start to have an impact on the ground. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's an opportunity. But it's good to kind of discuss a bit of that. I think that's not a bad place to finish up, Ian.
Yep, that's all good for me.
Thanks very much for joining us today. For more information on some of the topics that we covered here, please visit the Farming for a Better Climate website. And to listen to more of the podcasts, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.